Hello, everyone, and welcome to the WARC podcast. My name is Rika Facundo, APAC editor, and I'll be your host today. Spikes Asia, the region's oldest and most prestigious award and conference for creative and effective advertising, just finished recently. Hundreds of marketers, creatives, and strategists came down to Singapore to discuss and get inspired by all the changes happening in our exciting region. Now, there were a lot of topics being discussed, such as AI, of course, but one of the underlying themes I noticed was about culture. Those of you who know me or have seen our WARC coverage know that this is absolutely one of my favorite topics. But on this episode, I'll be unpacking various interviews with some of the speakers about how brands can effectively navigate the culture nuances in our region. But first, we should start with some definitions, especially since culture is often seen as a very ambiguous term. And a useful place to get our head around what culture is by looking at what it's not or no longer is. Let's hear from the first of our three speakers, Ada Lazaro, Regional Marketing Director of McDonald's, talking about how culture marketing was done in the past and how that approach has changed.
Before, it would probably be like I am in culture if I am part of a big occasion. I am in culture when consumers would go to McDonald's to visit, let's say, a wedding, which is usually not the case. But now it's more about I'm part of the ritual. It's not just about putting an ad on the Super Bowl, let's say. But being in culture is when consumers actually eat McDonald's when they're watching the sport. That's when you become integral. You become part of the conversation. You're part of the experience. So it's not simply, now it's not about putting, let's say, a McDonald's cup to a KOL who's doing streaming over videos and or video games. But it's the fact that gamers actually look for McDonald's products within the actual games. And that's how we've become part of it. It's not branded McDonald's, but it looks like McDonald's. And we make consumers think it is McDonald's. So it's integrating ourselves more authentically and seamlessly. It's not hard sell. It's just being part of the conversation.
As Ada pointed out, culture marketing is no longer about being just part of a big occasion such as Chinese New Year or Ramadan, but it's about incorporating the brand in the lives and everyday rituals of its audiences. Now, there's another misconception about how culture marketing should be done that Stephanie Winkler, head of CrowdDNA APAC, pinpointed when I spoke to her. Let's hear what she has to say.
I think as marketers, a lot of people think of culture in terms of just how it manifests. And often that's the biggest myth that like culture is trends. But culture goes so far beyond that, right? Like trends are the end product, but culture is very much the starting point. So in terms of defining culture, we talk about it as shared meaning between people. And it seems pretty straightforward when you put it that way, but people are really messy, and that's what we've spoken about at Spikes. You know, we're super paradoxical. We have these crazy contradictions and like very rich inner worlds that are often not on display that really shape sort of our behaviors and, you know, and things like that as well. Our cultural worlds are very complex as a result. So culture's messy. We need to, I guess, look at both the intrinsic and the extrinsic factors that are shaping people's mindsets or their behaviors or their attitudes. And for us, the best way to get to these answers is really just immersing with people, you know, from the outside in, from the inside out, just understanding their worlds as much as we can. So pinpointing those tensions, the problems that we can solve for them, like why do they feel this conflict about this thing? Why is this a tension for them? What's driving that? And the more stories you collect, you can sort of create a really clear job to be done there in terms of helping to decode culture or understand it or work with it.
Okay, now that we've interrogated what culture is and what it's not, let's look into some examples of putting cultural strategy in action, specifically where culture insights can come from. I'll share two case studies from our speakers. The first is from Yusuke Ozawa, creative director at Ultra Super New, who spoke about how the agency helped skin condoms break into Japan and broke taboos in the process.
One of the things that was happening in the Japanese market, especially in the condom market, was there was a lot of male dominance and male sort of centric branding messaging right at the time when Skin launched, there was a lot of movement globally on like equality and that kind of stuff. And it was more about, less about male dominance, but more like equality. And so there were two things that we focused on when we created the communication. One was the product itself used this unique material called IR rubber. And the IR rubber is very soft compared to other condoms, and it had like a flesh-like feeling. So it's almost like holding someone's hand. And the texture itself was actually pleasurable for both, instead of the traditional condoms that were like more for male pleasure. The message that we focused on was that it was for couples and not just for male only. So we shifted our communication from, you know, the thing that, you know, people are used to seeing, which is like male dominance, to something that's a little bit more softer, communication between two people.
What stood out to me here when I spoke to Yuska-san is that there were two sources of culture insight. The first is understanding both the global and local context of conversation about gender. As he pointed out, there was this global movement about gender equality, but in reality, the local condom market was still dominated by male narratives, but that's where the opportunity was. The second type of insight came from the product truth. The material of the condom itself was conducive to everyone involved. This is an important and underlooked aspect of culture marketing. You need to make sure that the product backs up the brand positioning and the communications, or else people today would not hesitate to call that out. Now let's talk about a different challenge that marketers may face when trying to navigate different types of cultures, especially in a diverse market like Asia. The next case study I want to share is from McDonald's and the different ways that they localized a regional campaign they did with NewJeans, which is a K-pop band.
With the NewJeans campaign in particular, I would say the campaign was between 60 to 70% standardized and around 30 to 40% localized. So all of the creative assets were standardized. The big idea, as I mentioned earlier, was that McDonald's chicken is so good, it will get everyone dancing. And who better to get everyone dancing than especially the Gen Zs, but their fan favorite NewJeans. They have wide appeal across many countries in the region, and their music, or K-pop music in general, transcends cultures. So we had one song. There was one song, one TVC or OLV. It was the same digital engagement video. We had uniform key visuals on social media, out of home, front counter, the same store dress up and down to packaging that was standardized. Even the content calendar was tailored. So that was the big 60-70% of the campaign. But we had to make or allow markets to localize to ensure, again, that they resonate with the local consumers. And we started primarily with a product. It had to be the iconic chicken in the market. So countries like Korea, Taiwan, and Hong Kong featured a McCrispy chicken burger, where eating a chicken sandwich or chicken burger was more dominant. But in the more rice-eating countries like Thailand and Indonesia, they feature their iconic bone-in chicken. So it really had to be the product that consumers love, and we allowed room for consumer product preference. Second, is we also localized below-the-line activations and consumer engagement, because we all agree that there are unique nuances.
The other interesting thing about this case study is that the brand also didn't assume that all markets in Asia behave the same way. What they did was interrogate the data and found that the NewJeans fans in Thailand were actually not fond of dancing. Here's Ada again talking about what their team did when they discovered this insight.
When they zoomed into the profiles of the NewJeans fans, they found out that majority were actually males. And males in general didn't want to dance or didn't want to be seen dancing. So had they not known this information, they could have easily just scaled the same mechanics from the Philippines, from Indonesia, and that wouldn't have worked because, again, males didn't want to be seen dancing. So deep dive into your local data and use this data to localize and tweak the mechanics such that it becomes successful, such that it becomes relevant.
So we've talked about the definitions of culture and some examples of culture strategy in action. Let's end by looking at some best practice from our experts. At Spike, Steph from CrowdDNA spoke about four principles of understanding culture, namely decoding, reframing, challenging, and creating culture. I asked her which one is the most underused from brands. Here's what she had to say.
Rejecting culture is probably the one that's the most underused by brands anyway. To your point about trend jacking, it's like, this thing's trending, we need to jump on it, you know, immediately go. But we never actually examine why something is happening and whether it's a good thing that we tap into this or not. So again, with nostalgia, this huge global mega trend of nostalgia that we're seeing everywhere, including across APAC, you know, again, it seems really nice, but it's coming from a place of sadness. It's stripping originality and new ideas out of the equation, pushing them to the fringes. And it's kind of impacting, if you really dig into it, it's kind of impacting on our ability to create a cohesive, like, zeitgeist or narrative of the now, because we're kind of focusing too much of our energy on the back then. So it's kind of like, do brands actually want to show up just by jumping on that trend? Like, we need to think about other ways that they can come at it. And one of them is about, you know, using the past to reshape a more positive present, you know, like tapping into nostalgia in some ways, but reframing it more for the current mood and narrative, and to reflect the people and the opinions, you know, of the present day, and serve them in a more positive way.
This is an important thing for marketers to consider. While it's easy to get caught up chasing trends and being reactive to what's happening, it's equally important to stop and interrogate what the underlying shift is telling you about your customer and how they're feeling about the world. That's where you get to more powerful and more enduring strategy, like what Stephanie mentioned about nostalgia. Another key thing that our experts have pointed out throughout this episode and in their conversations with me is that participating in culture is not about short-term trendjacking. It requires investment and commitment from the brand to do it authentically and credibly. Here's Yusuke-san again about his tips for brands entering into Japan.
I would say if a new brand is trying to break it into the Japanese market, I would say it would take like 5 to 10 years minimum to become part of Japanese culture and become accepted in Japanese society. But once it does break in, it's going to be in Japan for a very long time. So in the initial phase, it takes a lot of investment. But once the company is part of a natural everyday routine, then it's going to be accepted in Japan for a very long time.
Yusuke-san pointed out that investing in culture requires time and resources. But I wanted to end this episode on one last best practice, which speaks to having the right internal processes, behaviors, and attitudes in place to ensure that your messaging lands. Here's Ada again about how McDonald's changed its approach to localization.
This is actually a part of the thinking that as a global brand, we are trying to change. Years prior, it was a lot about one big idea from corporate or global McDonald's, and everyone just had to launch or scale it downwards. Disadvantages, yes, it may be a big campaign, resources are optimized because one production, but then again, it might not resonate with everyone. It may work for the Americans, might not necessarily work for the Asians, and we have to consider that. So right now, what is happening or how we are changing their thinking is more about bottom to up. Bottom by saying we give the power to the local markets. Instead of cascading from top down, these ideas that come from a market level are actually shared to a creative council. And those that are potential are then brought up, pitched in to everyone else. And whoever finds relevance, then they have the option or opportunity to scale. So it's not force fitting. It's sharing best practices and encouraging each of the markets to just shamelessly steal. It's one practice that we're not shy about. We steal a lot of ideas from Latin America, for instance, and we take pride in that. And I guess that's how we put full use of our global scale, shamelessly stealing local ideas that are very much scalable, because at the end of the day, it's one McDonald's brand.
That's all the time we have today. Thank you so much to our guests for their insights. Check out WARC for other coverage from Spikes, or read more about culture in our recent WARC Guide to Culture Advantage. If you like what you heard, don't forget to subscribe to the WARC podcast. Until next time.